Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue and it's another international break. But there's still plenty to chat about. Is this perfect timing for Liverpool? Or bad timing for Arsenal? Colin Bouygues from Off The Ball will be in to look at what's going on in the league. Bournemouth, they're flying high, so lifelong Cherries fan Harry Bailey will be in for a chat. And since there's no games this weekend, we thought we might look back at some of the most iconic post-match interviews from managers throughout the years. Oh, there's some doozies in there, let me tell you. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff.
With Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
No, but seriously.
Oh, hello. Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. We're already up and running. Colm, how are you?
Hiya, Cathal.
Yeah, how are you? I'm very good. Very nice quickly. Haircut. Thank you very much. I have a county final this weekend.
I knew he is. When you know it's like championship ready.
Yeah.
County in this case.
Yeah, county final.
We had David Reedy on the show this week.
I saw it. And I heard him saying that he could have been at a house party. This is Wednesday morning you were chatting to him?
Yeah, Wednesday
morning. And he wasn't sure where he'd be the night before. I really hope this time next week or on a Wednesday morning, Wednesday of next week, I'm that kind of guy. I'm waking up that morning.
Oh,
you know, just that, you know, the Tuesday was good as well.
Have you booked early next week off?
I have. Now, it won't fizzle into the Tuesday if we don't win. But it'll definitely be win or lose, Sunday, Monday will be celebrated or commiserated.
How do you
with my team members?
How do you square that now with your employers? Like, they must be flexible enough. So minimum lads, I'm off Monday. But you say to Dave Moore and your new overlord who starts on Monday, Nathan Murphy.
Yeah, I think he's going to get it. Nathan Murphy will be my new boss. And I was thinking, it's a bit dodgy, you're missing the first day as a new boss. Yeah. And I was thinking, you know what? He'll understand. He'll know I was playing a county final.
He'll respect my anti-authority status. This is like Cathal and Nathan's relationship. That's for the audio listeners. It's like, see that? That was a high five to myself. It was like, bro, Cathal will be going into the office. Right? Bro, you get this, man. I'm gonna shoot off, right? I'm going to shoot off early. I got county training.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, yeah, whatever, man. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, I could really, really milk this. Because now, you know, he'll understand.
He just gets it. You know?
He just gets it.
Yeah. And just the power of saying to someone, right? You just get it. Because people like being told they get it.
Yeah.
It's the way to manage your uppers. You just... Boss, you just get it.
Well, it doesn't sound too condescending.
You got to make it seem like it's authentic. You got to really make it seem like he really does get it. Be like, look, Nathan, I'm a bit different. Right? My name's Cathal. It might be a common name, but I am no common man.
I'm definitely not going that route. He was a guest on this show when you went off on one of your many holidays,
well, many,
early doors.
Many, I mean, it's in my contract.
It is.
I have to go. Like, I didn't negotiate the contract. That was my agent.
Yeah.
I have nothing to do with this. Like, my agent says to me, all you got to do is worry about when the red light goes on. I'll take care of the rest. So I can't help him if I've been carried and pulled pillar to post. I'm just happy to be here. This is a football show.
Yeah.
We've talked anything but.
But hey, come here. Look, that's just a peek behind the curtain. That's what's going on in my life. I might be honing in on my Premier League knowledge, but in the background, I'm still playing my hurling.
How long do you think it will take now before you're getting a nudge from the opposition to be like, oh, you're a soccer man now, are you? I hear you on the radio every every weekend. What's that about?
That'd be terrible sledging. There's so much worse they could say to you.
Oh, I know, yeah.
If they're saying that to me, I'll just say, lovely, another listener. That's
well, I think what they're getting at is that you've forgotten your roots, like, that's what they'll be saying to you.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that will cut deep.
Yeah, that would actually hurt. Big time.
Oh, guys, please stop.
They don't want to see me angry. But this is your first time being on the show and it's an international break. That's why we're a bit loose, because it's international weekend. Please God, it'll be a lot better than the last one we had. But just in terms of the Premier League, let's revert it back to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Who's happy that it's the international break now? Are Liverpool happy?
Good question. Are they happy? Well, they're in unprecedented territory for sure. Never lost three games in a row in their Irish lot till now. We're living in that era right now. There's two in the league and one in the Champions League. So are they happy that there was an international break? I suspect not. I suspect the players want another game to rectify the last performance away to Chelsea. It was a last minute winner by Chelsea, but it was deserved. The same way that they lost to Crystal Palace the week before, last minute. I don't know what's going on there, but it's been both for and against. They're scoring and conceding very late goals. I don't know what's in that. I would say that they're probably a bit annoyed that they didn't have the whole, you know, game in 3 days' time. What they will have to look forward to upon their return a week from now will be Manchester United at Anfield. That would be a great way to right the wrongs of the past fortnight. For Manchester United, they're probably almost certainly unhappy that the international break occurred right there, because they beat Sunderland.
And a good display as things have been going.
Actually, looking at the most comfortable win that United have had, by my calculation, since the 16th of March, when they went to Leicester and won 3-0. Leicester, of course, got relegated. So one thing we do know about United, they're definitely going to be fine if they go down to the Championship.
Yeah, they can play.
No problem there.
Leicester and this year Sunderland have just come up and they beat
Burnley a few weeks ago, and they've won 3 games in 7, so they are bang average mid-table. But 2 of the 3 sides they've beaten came up from the Championship last season. We just covered Sunderland, and they beat Burnley a few weeks ago, and then the other game that they won was Chelsea, and they went down to 10 men after 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And United eventually went down 10 men themselves at the end of that half. But
Casemiro.
So they're not, I mean, it's very much TBC there. There is, of course, more United news, there always is. And that's Sir Jim Ratcliffe has come out and said that Ruben Amorim is safe for 3 years. So you hear about the dreaded vote of confidence. Usually it's 3 games. And then before you know it, they pull the plug. But Ratcliffe is saying, I'm not going to respond to any reactionary journalists who call for someone's head after every game. So he's saying 3 years. Now, I presume that means 2 years left. He's done a year, just shy of a year. And he has a short enough contract. So I think it will expire within that time. So he's talking from now until 2027. And so a lot can happen in that time. So if you're going to give him that length of time, that's another 4 transfer windows at least, or 3 at least. And that means that he'll be signing players that are more and more akin to his very specific formation and system.
So you think it's a good idea?
Well, if you want to commit to this guy, you got to do it properly, don't you? The risk is that it's complete calamity, disastrous. And then you don't just have to sack him and pay him off. Then you probably have to revert the squad back to the next manager's liking, which will take another few years. It's a conundrum, this United puzzle.
Yeah.
No one's been able to solve it.
So maybe you kind of have to respect his decision in thinking that...
Well, it's a call.
What hasn't worked is the chopping and changing of managers.
Yeah, it's just been so disastrous. I mean, I'd say they're fairly meaningless words if Amorim and United return after international break and lose 4 of the next 5 games. There's a good chance they're going to sack him anyway. But for now, Amorim can rest easy in this international break. He knows that his boss is happy to have him for a couple of years yet.
Yeah, I'd say he's not resting too easy though. He does have the worries of Portugal playing Ireland. You know, I'd say.
Great segue. Beautiful. So worrying for them, yeah. They're without João Neves. I mean, that's something, the Paris Saint-Germain midfielder, the Champions League winner. So we're looking good there.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have Jason Knight. So you could argue, is that a loss? Yeah, like Knight's been one of our more consistent players. But what is a consistent? I mean, he's consistently terrible for Ireland recently.
Do we have any hope?
Yeah, I think we perversely do, because there is no hope. And Irish people are very good when there's no hope.
You know you'd be good at? Writing stickers for the backs of cars.
Yeah, I think
just quotes.
You know, I always wanted to do that. Then my football coach said, concentrate on football. I said, Pat, all I want to do is write slogans for people when they're in traffic. And he says, man, you can make a professional as a footballer. I don't want that.
No.
I don't want that.
Slogans.
I'm a guy who you can quote on a brightly coloured sticker. And you can put it up here in the walls to keep you motivated. Put up into the dressing room for county finals if you want. That's your business. I just say the quotes. You distribute them as you please.
Columns, quotes.
Great shout, though. Here's one for you, right? Does it suit the Irish psyche when you're written off entirely? In other words, when Ireland played Hungary in the first game out in this qualification campaign, there was so much buzz and excitement, Cahill. It was unbelievable.
Mm.
Tantalising. And I always thought... throughout that game, even because Hungary scored so early, that it just didn't suit us because we basically treated that match like it was a final. Like they have to get 3 points from this game against Hungary. They have to, because they have Portugal in the group. They have to get 3 points from Hungary, and it's the home game. And I just fundamentally think that didn't suit this group of players. And more broadly, and perhaps a little controversially, it doesn't suit a lot of Irish people to have that much pressure on them to perform at the very top level.
It also doesn't suit when you are favourite to win.
I don't know if it does. I wish
look,
it did.
Just look what happened in Armenia.
There are exceptions. I know there'll be rugby fans out there shouting, like, you know, whatever about your opinion of whether they're the best team in the world. Ireland were officially ranked world number one in the world at rugby. And obviously when you have All-Ireland finals, you see amazing displays in front of sold-out crowds at Croke Park. So it can be done. I'm not saying there are exceptions to the rule, but there is a psyche about us that write us off at your peril. That's when we're pretty strong. And I'm not saying that it's going to be a reeling in the ears moment against Portugal this weekend, but I don't feel hopeless like many do. And I don't know why. So why you could very fairly ask me why, if you like.
Why, Colin?
4 years ago, Ireland went to Faro to play Portugal under Stephen Kenny. And they lost 2-1, but they were 1-0 up into the dying minutes of that match before Cristiano Ronaldo scored a double. John Egan scored in that game. John Egan hasn't been picked for Ireland for 2 years until this window. There's a chance that John Egan will play some part against Portugal.
But is he just in there for vibes?
No, he's
maybe just
well.
A kind of...
I thought his career was done, Cahill, because I remember...
Settle the thing down. Is that the reason he's there?
Well, he left Sheffield United a couple of years ago, and then he was spotted at a Manchester United game at Old Trafford just as a fan. I thought he's probably done. But he signed for Hull City subsequently, and he's been really good and really consistent. He's a good defensive partner with them at Hull. So he's an option for sure, because I think they'll play 5-3-2 against Portugal.
It would make sense.
And I wonder, will Troy Parrott play? Troy Parrott's been injured recently. He came on for 20 minutes for AZ Alkmaar, his club in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Evan Ferguson was injured last weekend. He's on the bench for Roma, but Gasperini, his boss, said afterwards that he's carrying an ankle knock. You're looking at the Portugal squad. I said that Joe Neves is missing. They have a ridiculous catalogue of replacements. Yeah. It doesn't really matter.
No.
And they have your man up front who doesn't care about the opposition. All he wants is more and more goals to add to his record. The fellow who became the first billionaire footballer during the week, Cristiano Ronaldo. He just wants to get to 1,000 goals. So he doesn't care who he's playing. And this is a handy hat-trick for him in the waiting, if he wants it. So there's motivation from him alone. The only hope he'd have is that the rest of the team are a bit complacent, because they've started really well. They're going to qualify. So they're a bit complacent and we play above ourselves, which means a brilliant collective defensive effort. The one thing I worry about is, do we have that dog in us? Do we have what the Barnet manager, Dean Brennan, who we had an off-the-ball breakfast during the week, do we have that character? Do we have it? I don't know. We have Nathan Collins, who's our captain, who's also the captain of our unofficial Premier League club, Brentford, who's a lovely footballing defender at his best. Lovely anticipation about him. Rio Ferdinand light when it's going well for him, but can be sloppy, can be really sloppy. Who's our hard man in the team? Jason Malumbi, but he's too hard in that he's reckless. He could get booked after 6.5 minutes here in Portugal, and then we're in mad trouble. We may come away with nothing. We might have a little hope that we can do something. Then the more important game is the one after.
That's the big one. That's when probably they might save Troy Parrott for the likes of that, because that's your final, if anything.
Yeah.
As long as they don't get absolutely smoked this weekend. You did mention one man there, Dean Brennan, who is the Barnet manager, who you spoke to during the week on Off the Ball, as you said. He inspired me. He actually inspired me. I'd never seen his post-match interview before. And since it's the international break, I thought we might look at some of the best post-match interviews from managers throughout the years in the Premier League. And we will do that later on in the show. In the meantime, Bournemouth, who are flying it in the Premier League. I was on a hunt for a Bournemouth fan for the last few weeks. I have found one. There is a few in Ireland. One of them is Harry Bailey. He's on the show next. Colm, you'll be back?
I will.
Good man. Cherries fan, Harry Bailey, he's on the way.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Now, like we do every week, it's time to talk to a fan. And I have been trying for the last number of weeks to talk to a Bournemouth fan. Now, it's been a bit of a struggle to try and find a fan in Ireland, a Bournemouth fan in Ireland. There seems to be no supporters club. There was one once upon a time, and maybe there is one. I just couldn't find it. Anyway, we have one. Harry Bailey, welcome to the show.
How's it going? How are you?
Not bad. Where do I find you today?
I'm on a rooftop in Madrid.
Living the dream.
If my lecturers ask, I'm in your studio though.
okay, right. We won't say any more. It's the sun is shining though, yeah.
Oh god, yeah. It's about 25 degrees. It's amazing.
Nice one. Not jealous at all. Not jealous. Yeah, I was saying there, I was struggling to find a Bournemouth fan. Usually the way I go about it is, Harry, each week on the show, I chat with a fan. It can be from any club. Usually I kind of keep it topical. And if there's something going on in the club that week, try and talk to a fan. I would search and seek out supporters clubs in Ireland. Can't find one for Bournemouth. And is there one, do you know?
Not that I'm aware of. Mm. Like, I know other Bournemouth fans, but that's by pure fluke of bumping into them. Like, as far as I'm aware, there isn't one. If there is, it hasn't been active. I remember there was one on Facebook when I was a kid, but I don't think they're active anymore. So, no, I don't think there is.
Yeah, I came across, there was one active in 2016. I think they were based in Navan or something like that. But yeah, it seems to be none now. But there's a few of you around anyway. You know a few more, you do.
Yeah, I got to college with one, and then I think we've kind of recruited a few back home in Rathaus. I think whenever you see someone go to the pub in a Bournemouth shirt, you kind of can't help but want them to beat United or Liverpool or whoever it is we're playing that week.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And it's a good time to be a Bournemouth fan as well. Currently fourth in the league. We'll get on to that. First of all, how did you start supporting the club?
The short answer is my family are all from there. My dad's from there. My granddad was a Bournemouth fan. My aunties and uncles are all Bournemouth fans. My cousins are Bournemouth fans. My dad played for them as a teen. I've one rogue Portsmouth fan uncle, but besides that, my whole family are Bournemouth.
Your dad played underage?
Yes, he did for Bournemouth. Schoolboy football, I think he called it. I think the equivalent to like the under-21s these days.
Right, okay, cool. He moved to Ireland. He's from Bournemouth, is he? He moved to Ireland then?
He is, yeah. He moved about 30 years ago. He runs restaurants now in Ireland. But originally my family are all from Bournemouth.
And where in Ireland are you living now?
We're based in Rathaut. We live in Rathaut. That's where we have our very small unofficial AFC Bournemouth fan club is in Rathaut in Meath.
Right, okay. That's where the ultras are. So that's where you're hiding out. And do yourself and your dad, do you get over to many games?
We do. The issue is stadium is so small. It's just over 11,000. So it's impossible really to get tickets anymore. Everyone kind of has season tickets. We've been kind of trying to get a season ticket for as long as I can remember. It'll be at least 10 years. So we do get over, but it's the more expensive ticket. So you can only really afford to do that maybe two or three times a season. But we do. We get over two or three times a season.
Yeah, it is tricky. Yeah, just over 11,000 in the Vitality Stadium, as you said. I would imagine, though, that the atmosphere must be incredible. It looks it when you're watching the games on telly. The atmosphere is just so small and compact that it looks like it's a great place to go and watch a match.
It is. It's great. The owner as well, Bill Foley's kind of pumped money into the stadium to make the atmosphere that bit better, putting in the fire before the match and Enter Sandman, Metallica when they come out and all the various other things. Like, he's put a lot of money into it as well, so that there is a great atmosphere there.
Yeah, do you know, is there a reason why it's Enter Sandman?
I don't know the reason. I would assume because he owns Black Knight Sports Group, so I would assume it's something to do with a previous team of his, but I'm not sure.
And when you're heading over to matches, where do you fly into?
These days now you have to fly into Southampton. You used to be able to fly into Bournemouth, but I don't think Ryanair do that anymore. So it's into Southampton, and then it's only a 20-minute drive. It's not too bad.
Are you the type of people now that do over and back in the one day, or do you try and make a weekend of it? Because
we'll make a weekend of it. Or we generally go to the midweek fixtures, to be honest. But we'd hang around as well, because there's one particularly nice hotel in Bournemouth. So if you stay there, the chances of you meeting the players and everything is pretty high as well. So it's great.
You're having a good year. That's why I was seeking one out, because, and I was thinking this must end at some stage. But I mean, we're into the second international break and you're fourth in the league now. Played seven. You've won four, two draws and only one loss. Like, you're 2 points off the top spot. It's been an incredible start, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. As long as everyone stays fit, I don't see any reason why it can't continue. We have a bit of a rough patch of fixtures after the internationals. We have Palace, who are great, and then City and another big club as well, all in a row. So that'll be a tricky one. But as long as everyone stays fit, Iriola is an amazing manager. And then we have players like Semenyo who can just win a game by themselves. So as long as everyone stays injury free, I think we can keep pushing.
Yeah, Semenyo is absolutely flying it as well. 6 goals and 3 assists in the 7 games. I mean, you type his name into Google now, and it's one thing that kind of annoys me about the football chat is that even when the transfer window closes, a lot of the articles are about transfers and where this player might go to next and who's going to keep an eye on this player. And bad news for Bournemouth fans, sometimes there's no meat to these stories at all. But if you do type Semenya's name into Google, you do get a lot of stories about the big clubs that will be looking for him maybe come January. Although I think he just signed a new contract, didn't he? So
he did, yeah.
Yeah, but it is one of those worries, isn't it? When you have a world-class player like that, and a player now with the way things are going, that you could say you'd sell him for more than 100 million the way he's playing now. It's tricky, isn't it, when you have such a good player to hold on to him?
It is, yeah. Like in the summer we lost our entire defence, as well as Dango as well, who kind of could play in every single position, and we replaced all of them. That's one thing I'll say about Bournemouth is you kind of throw them in there with the Brentfords and the Brightons. They're just such a well-run club. They find the replacements every summer. So I'd say even if Semenya was to go mid-season, I think it would be a huge impact on our season. But if we keep him till the summer and we do sell him in the summer, at least we then have, you know, the 3 months where we could find a replacement, which is something that Bournemouth seem to be really good at doing.
Ninth last season as well, which I would imagine that's a great year for the club.
Yeah, last year was the most points we ever got. Mm. Iraola, yeah, every season Iraola has been in charge. He's broken whatever records were there before. So yeah, most points we ever got, most goals we ever scored, most clean sheets we ever got. So last season was like about as good as it gets, other than we missed out on Conference League at the last minute. So obviously this season, the only way we can improve really is qualify for some sort of European competition.
That's the goal, I'm guessing.
Yeah, 100%. We've never been in Europe, so.
Is it taken for granted now when you start doing well? Like, you know, such a great season last season. Now you're starting to bang in goals, fourth in the league. Is it dreamland, or do you go into games now? Like, in fairness, you've flagged that the Crystal Palace game is a tough one, which it is. I mean, yeah, they beat Liverpool 2-1 a couple of weeks ago, and they're only 2 points behind you. But do you ever fear that there's a bit of complacency, or is this just dreamland stuff and whatever happens, this is great?
The weird thing about Bournemouth is I always fancy them more against the bigger teams than the sort of the relegation battlers. Like against Leeds, we were very poor. It was definitely the poorest game of the season. Whereas I thought against Liverpool, there was, even though we lost that match, we were unbelievable. Like whenever we play against the likes of Spurs or Chelsea or United, I always think we can win. Whereas whenever we're playing the likes of, say, Wolves or Leeds or whoever, I always fear that that is the game where we do slip up.
Yeah, they're the banana skins.
I do think Palace are going to be a tricky one.
He played them on Saturday the 18th, so that's after this international break. And then you've got Forest at home after that. I mean, Forest aren't doing too well since Ange has gone in. So, but as you said, they're the kind of games that you fear most.
They are, yeah, 100%. The ones where you think that we should get a result are normally the ones where we lose 1-0 or there's a last-minute equaliser or something where we drop points. So, yeah, the Forest game would be one that I'd be eyeing up as a big one for the season, because if we win that, then there's no reason we can't beat the other teams in that sort of position in the league as well.
Yeah, you get confidence from that. And just in terms of going over then, Harry, you've been to a couple of games. What would be your most memorable game?
The most memorable experience was going to Old Trafford, where just before kickoff the match was called off because of a fake bomb scare. So that was meant to be me seeing us hopefully beat United. We didn't get to play that match, and then we ended up losing in the replay. But I've seen us play Spurs at Wembley, which was amazing when they were refurbing the new stadium. And then last season I saw us beat Southampton at home, which was about as good as it gets.
That game you're talking about, the bomb scare, that's back in 2016, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a training drill where they left a fake bomb behind or something by accident, and then they found it on match day and had to call the match off.
A very good evening to you. The last day of the Premier League football season was thrown into chaos this afternoon when tens of thousands of fans had to be evacuated from Manchester United's Old Trafford Stadium because of a suspect package. Bomb disposal experts later carried out a controlled explosion. United had been due to play Bournemouth, and a win could have secured them a place in next season's Champions League.
So where were you in the stadium at this stage, or where?
Yeah, we were in the away end, and the away end was absolutely packed, and there was no one in the home end, and we couldn't figure out why. We thought that the match had been pushed out for some reason, and then all of a sudden it kind of came onto people's phones that there was a bomb scare at Old Trafford, and then we had to evacuate the stadium.
Jesus.
Yeah, and then they ended up pushing it out to the following week, and I remember we lost the replay as well, which was even more annoying.
And did you get to go to the replay?
No, didn't get a chance.
So it was a double.
Yeah,
a double whammy for you.
Yeah, stuck in Manchester for no reason at all, and then missed the replay, and we lost the replay. So it was, that was definitely a low point.
Oh my God! Wow, and was it scary when you heard when you're getting out that there's a bomb scare?
It was more confusing, to be honest, because we couldn't understand why there was no home fans at Old Trafford. Like, it was a bit of a joke about it. And I think as well, because it was a long enough journey for the home fans on the bus, they all bought inflatables with them. So they were throwing beach balls and big inflatable crocodiles and stuff around the stands, waiting for something to happen. And then all of a sudden it came over the intercom that we had to evacuate the stadium.
Wow, gee, you won't forget that anytime soon. A strange day, yeah. I would say. Expect to watch a game of football and a lot more happens than no football at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That literally is bizarre. So come here, what's the goal for this season? So it's obviously Europe, but I mean, are you dreaming big?
Yeah.
Are you saying Europa League?
I think if everyone stays fit for the season, or if most players stay fit for the season, I think Europa League is definitely doable. I think the Conference League is probably the ambition, but I think we could definitely push for a Europa League place.
But the way things are going as well, like, I'm sure you take a bit of encouragement when you see the likes of Liverpool getting bet by Crystal Palace as well. You know, just those kind
That's
of results
amazing.
To make you think like, yeah, like, you know, these teams can be beaten.
Yeah, not that we're going to do it, but that was exactly what was happening the year that Leicester won the league, was everyone was dropping points everywhere, which kind of opened the door for teams like Leicester and even like Spurs finished a lot higher than they normally would that season. In seasons before where they would have been kind of on the cusp of things. So
yeah.
In the seasons where everyone's dropping points, it kind of becomes a bit of a free-for-all as to who actually gets European football.
Have you got a game planned for this year?
Yeah, we're going to a couple. They're all home. We've Everton at home, Brentford at home, and Tottenham at home as well. So
nice.
They're all this season. The first one's in December, and then we've two after the January window as well, so looking forward to them.
Cool. Well, look, enjoy it. I'm glad I finally found a Bournemouth fan, and Harry, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Enjoy the Madrid weather. I can tell you it's cold and rotten here in Ireland, so you're not missing much. If you do get into Europe, we must have a chat later on in the season, and you must get your dad on as well. I'd love to hear about his time playing for Bournemouth as well. That sounds like
like
an experience. Thanks for talking to me. Enjoy this season and enjoy the games.
Oh, well, of course. Thank you very much.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue.
Welcome back to The Kickoff. My man, Colin Buig from Off The Ball is here again.
Yeah.
How are you?
You're well.
Oh, we probably don't have to say how are you a second time. I mean,
yeah,
I just
you
seen
like.
You about 20 minutes ago.
I know, but it's nice, you know, because otherwise it's out of context for people, you know.
They're yeah, just in case.
They're going to be tuning in now.
Exactly.
Right
or
now.
Just now. And you kind of, you know what, okay. I asked you how are you because we kind of finished on a bit of a downbeat there. You just look, we were talking about Ireland and their chances against Portugal, which are slim, but you know, just
what do you have hope?
Write us off at your peril. Look, I always have hope. It's the hope that kills you. That's what I say. Anyway, I did mention that. I want to relive some of the iconic post match interviews from managers, right? So, as I said, you were chatting to Dean Brennan, who is from Dublin. Where in Dublin is he from?
The Liberties.
He is the manager of Barnet for the last number of years,
since 2021.
Last year, he had an incredible post-match interview. Have a listen.
You know what happens in life? When you're in the tough times, you see the real characters, the real people. That's what I'm looking for. Character. In this group, character. I want fans to come with it. There's a message for you. All right? Do not edit that, by the way. I want that to go out, because that's very important. Because we're very open and very honest with our supporters. But when I'm hearing all negativity, when we're playing well, good goal by Altrincham, by the way. Good goal on the counter-attack. Fair play. Good goal. Good. Justin's a good player. Pace. And I've got to listen to that moan in my ear.
Character. I love it. He's just so unapologetically himself there. And he's brilliant. And it's a great interview that you did have with him on Off The Ball, if you want to listen back to that. But it did inspire me to look back at some of the other iconic post-match interviews. Who can ever forget Harry Redknapp's wheeler dealer moment?
And you mean you've made your name as a wheeler and dealer. There's not
no,
been
I'm
much wheeling and
no,
dealing,
no,
you
no,
know?
No, I'm not a wheeler and dealer. No. Off.
Oh, no, I didn't mean like that.
I'm
a football manager. Right, you know the thing, a heartbreaking thing about that is the interviewer thought he had him on sides.
Yeah.
I said, no, no.
Yeah, no. No, 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 I didn't mean it like that.
No, please.
Yeah. It's a tough job. Those post-match interviews
are a nightmare.
Oh,
nightmare.
They're tough because managers nightmare, are tetchy, and a manager will always think, you don't know what I've just been through for those 90 minutes.
It's horrible because you got to have a load of questions prepared, more than you probably need, because you have to be prepared for being stonewalled. One word answers or no answers are just stares. Louis van Gaal was a great man for that. Just stare at you. Got to be prepared to have a load of questions and have a lot of thick skin.
Yeah.
It's the toughest gig out there. It's actually kind of bizarre that football continues to do them, because it really is pure theatre. Like, you're not actually gaining anything substantial or significant from it. It's pure theatre for the fans at home. Like, why do you immediately talk to a manager after a game? You see in the GA too, you see in any team sport. It's just to get a reaction of them. So what can you say that's helpful in that moment?
Well, one man who did not want to talk after one because he thought he would be in big, big trouble was back in 2014. Jose Mourinho is the Chelsea manager. They've just lost 1-0 to Villa.
Just how big an impact did those two sendings off have?
I prefer not to comment because it's not... If you want to speak about big decisions, you don't speak just about the red cards. I prefer really not to speak. If I speak, I am in big trouble. In big trouble. And I don't want to be in big trouble.
I love that one. I love it.
That's great, because that crossed the football divide and people started using that in life. I speak, I'm in big trouble.
it's great.
I didn't realise that was 2014.
Yeah, and you know what? He's after kind of getting his point across as well, because you can tell he's not happy, obviously.
So good at that. Like, that's his... You know, whatever about all the trophies he won at all the different clubs, it's really his mastery of the media. You know what's interesting? Because he spent so many years observing when no one was looking at him. This guy came from nothing in football. His upbringing is interesting. He was like middle-class guy, well-educated.
Mm.
Translator for Bobby Robson at Barcelona. Not a football guy, really. I think he played as a goalkeeper at extremely low level, but just studied the game and was building up this data of his own for years and years until he went into management. But there was always a suspicion of him. To this day, he holds a massive grudge against Barcelona for not giving him the job when Pep Guardiola left. And I think Real Madrid kind of destroyed his soul a bit. You could dig into his psyche for a long time. But he had one thing in abundance, which is very powerful in anything, and that was unlimited self-confidence. And you believed it. He wasn't a chancer. Like, you believed that he believed in himself.
That he was the special one.
Yeah. It goes back to the Irish psyche thing that we're talking about, which isn't ubiquitous, but it's very common. I prefer not to speak. Yeah. I think that was kind of Mourinho's equivalent of losing his head completely, because you never really hear Mourinho shout or lose his composure.
Yeah, you see, maybe on
Machiavellian.
You see, kind of on pitch side sometimes.
Oh yeah, but well, you know, there was that one with Spurs when he falls out of his chair because the coach is like,
amazing. Because he thought it was going to be a red card or something like that.
Yeah, and then your man showed him something, whatever, or explained something to him.
But it's fantastic, that one.
He's always enjoyed the media aspect of it. I think he sees it as a game.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't actually take it that seriously, and it's a great approach. But the demise of Mourinho is interesting. You know, that's why we're playing these things, but it's just reminding me of it.
Yeah, well, no, it's interesting though, because I was watching Sky Sports News during the week and Mike Phelan was on chatting about Ruben Amorim, and obviously enough, when you have someone from the good old days, he reverts back to times with Sir Alex Ferguson. Yeah. And he was just, the conversation was about how Ruben Amorim is very honest in interviews, way too honest at press conferences, and Mike Phelan was just saying that it's the wrong way to go about it. Although we might love it, it's the wrong way to go about it. And he referenced that Sir Alex would always control the media and the press conference. One man who kind of did lose his head, and it was at a time when you could feel the pressure was starting to come upon him, was Roy Hodgson. Remember this?
Mm-hmm. We were rocked back by another decision, which I find hard to accept, but luckily... Which one do you think?
I'm asking you.
No, well, I'll leave it then. If you're going to be tricky like that, I won't even bother to, you know, carry on. Shall we? Let's stop it here, shall we? I mean, you're going to be tricky with your questions.
No, I'm genuinely.
Well, let's start again. Which one? Well, how many were there? Well, they had two shots at goal. One was a penalty, and one was a strike at goal our goalkeeper saved. So, what decision are we talking about?
Okay.
So, you know, let's not take the piss here.
I certainly wasn't.
Well, I think you are.
Do you remember it?
I remember him getting increasingly tetchy as the years went by. He's a bit like Jurgen Klopp, actually.
It was following West Brom's 2-1 win versus Bolton.
So they won the game. Interesting.
They won the game.
That's how we imagine they lost. Jeez.
Liverpool did draw against Everton back in 2017. This was Jurgen Klopp's interview after the match. There was some contentious refereeing decisions. This is the one, right, where my stomach is starting to churn for the reporter.
If you think it's a penalty, then do it. Say it. It's a penalty in your opinion.
Okay. If you want my opinion doesn't matter. I would say soft.
Obviously, my opinion doesn't matter as well. So, but
of course, your opinion matters.
Does it change anything?
No, but we can't change anything in the interview, can we?
Say so far, it's a penalty or not?
I think it's soft, but I think it is a penalty.
So then we can stop the interview because I only want to talk to people who have a little bit of understanding of football. Sorry, I'm really... I
know you're angry, but there are people who played a lot of football matches in our studio who also think it's a penalty.
Oh, then sorry, I'm wrong. You're all right. Yeah, and I'll tell you...
I didn't say that.
Proper. Yes, that's what you said.
No, I didn't say you were wrong.
When all the people... when all the other people are right, then I must be wrong. Right?
No, just because... Isn't it a game of opinions?
But do you have to fill 5 minutes or what? Or why do we talk? Well, obviously, I'm not in a mood to answer your question.
Okay.
And you don't have better questions, do you?
Oh, that is great, man. I forgot about that one.
Oh, isn't it tough to listen to?
Yeah, I think he had a series of run-ins with that reporter. He got definitely more and more angry as the years went by, Jurgen Klopp. Look, I'm not one to analyse, you know, people's performances on air and all that because it's live. You don't have a chance to edit what you're saying. And I was like, oh, he started quite well there, Patrick Davidson. He held his own and, kind of saying, look, you don't care about my opinion, whatever. And well, okay, if you want to keep on asking me, I'll give you my opinion.
Yeah.
And it was a trap set by Klopp.
Don't fall into the trap.
As soon as he gave his opinion, he was like, well, I don't want to talk to you, so you don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about.
That
is the worst. I used to... match report for Off the Ball for the GA matches.
Yeah.
And it was the worst part. I used to love going to the games, all excited, loved doing the halftime reports and all that, heading, you know, back to studio, doing all that. And then when the match is over and you have to interview Davy Fitz as Waterford after getting bet by 2 points, a dodgy decision. And you're like, oh God, this is going to be tough. Let's leave it with one final one. I think the most iconic, it has to be Kevin Keegan.
When you do that with footballers, like he said about Leeds, and when you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that, but I'll tell you can tell him now, if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
What a note to finish it on.
Newcastle went on to lose that league title.
They certainly did. But he went down in history for that iconic quote. I would love it if we beat them. Thank you very much. We would love it if Ireland beat Portugal and Armenia. We can only live and hope. Colm, thank you very much. You're back again next week?
We're back next week.
Premier League is back next week
too. Premier League is back, baby, and you'll be back as a champion.
Please God.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Thanks very much for listening to the show. Just a reminder, kickoff@todayfm.com is our email address. Maybe you're heading off to a match, or you have a kid that's heading off to one of their first games, or maybe it's their 100th game. Whatever it is, if you want a bit of a shout out on the show, just get in touch. kickoff@todayfm.com, and that'll get us. Also, if you can find that like or subscribe button, or give it a rating if you think it's good, of course, then that would help the podcast a whole lot. So wherever you're listening to this on your podcast feed, if you can like, subscribe, a thumbs up, that all helps the show. It makes other football fans alike see the show, possibly dip into the show, see if they like it or not. So if you can do that, I'd very much appreciate it. And I know they all say that they would appreciate it. I promise you, I appreciate it. That's my begging done for today. I'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
Sensational! The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.